this will work with Gustavo Chaco and Ron Panic. So as you know, the electroweak symmetry breaking is in the standard model is given by this potential. So this m squared here, the mass of the Higgs, is very UV sensitive. So what it means is you get the one loop corrections, which is actually have a quadratic divergence. And so just naively try to see like how severe this is. So let me just take the lambda equal to 1. And so because of this potential here, that actually require this m have to be around 100 GeV to get the electroweak scale. So then that depends on what is your cutoff. So let's just 1 minute. Just take the lambda, the cutoff to be the gas scale, which is 10 to the 16 GeV. And you'll find, because you want to tune down, you want to cancel these two terms to get the correct m squared, you need a fine tuning in the order of 10 to the minus 26. So these are huge fine tuning you need to do. And this is called a gauge hierarchy. Of course, if you take much smaller cutoff, let's say if you take a cutoff to be the 10 GeV, then do the same thing, you'll find it's about 1%. You have to tune the parameter to 1%. And this is called the little hierarchy. And of course, the talk I'm going to give today is concentrate on this little one, not the big one. So what exactly is the little hierarchy problem? Or some people call it the left paradox. So it's actually coming from two constraints that we already know from the left measurement. So the first one is they have done a precision measurement, and they can put a constraint on this on the non-renormalized operator, for example, the for Fermi operators, and to put a constraint on that effective scale of that operator, and what is now known is that the scale had to be higher than about 5 TeV, 5 or 10 TeV. And another constraint is coming from, again, is a precision measurement that actually prefer the light Higgs. And now the bound of the Higgs mass is below 200 GeV. And because of these two experimental bound, and you put them together, and you will find the standard model actually have to really fine-tune to a few percent. So this is the little hierarchy or left paradox. So the question now is, do you believe the naturalness have to work actually at this level? This is not like 10 to the 26 fine-tuning, it's a 1% fine-tuning. So of course this is very hard to argue because that depends on what you believe. But let's assume that natural have to work. And so for this experiment, it seems to imply that we have to have some new physics to come in to do the cancellation actually naturally in order to get the correct electroweak scale without the 1% fine tuning. So if you want to do that, and you have to do two things. One is the new physics had to be able to cancel the quadratic divergence by some kind of symmetry, not just by hand. You have to be by guaranteed by some symmetry, and also you have to make sure this new physics doesn't have a big contribution to the non-renormalizable operator, because that will screw up the precision measurement. There's a two examples here that we know. One is from the supersymmetry with R parity. Again, the supersymmetry is the symmetry you need to cancel the quadratic divergence, and the R parity is the thing you need to actually suppress the non-renormalizable operator. And the second example is a little Higgs with T parity. So the symmetry, of course, is coming from some global symmetry in the little Higgs. And again, the T parity will be something that you need to actually suppress the non-renormalizable operator. So let's go deeper and try to see how this cancellation works. First, let's identify the diagram we have to cancel. So in a standard model, this is the one loop diagram. So the external leg is the Higgs, and something, some standard model field go into the loop. And this type of diagram is actually dominant by the top loop. The reason is very simple, because the top Yukawa is big, is one, and the gauge coupling is relatively smaller. So this is the top contribution, and this is the gauge contribution, and something is missing. Not just the gauge, the coupling constant is different. Of course, the degree of freedom that can run into the loop is also different, because you see the top have a color and is a fermion. It's 4 degree of freedom, and gauge field has a little bit lesser degree of freedom. So that make the top coupling become a dominant divergent. So of course, top is charged under SU3, so it's a color. So the first step to solve the little hierarchy problem is try to find a way to actually cancel the top loop. So now we can look at how Susie do it and how the little pigs does it. So in supersymmetry theory, the top loop is actually cancelled by the stop loop. So you have some scalar stuff going into the loop and you generate a diagram like this. The point I want to put here is because the supersymmetry is commute with the SU3, so when you do the supersymmetry transformation, which is given by the Q, is a generator of supersymmetry, then you bring the top to the stop, the scalar, but you didn't change any of the color index. Then that's what I mean is commute. And then because of this, the scalar is always charged under the SU3, at the SU3 color. And the same thing happened to the little Higgs. In the little Higgs, your usual electroweight SU2 is embedded into the larger global group. And again, this global group is actually, again, is commute with the color SU3. So you introduce new extra quarks that you need to complete the multiplet with the top. And this top corner is the extra quarks, and then have to be color also. And you can actually do the same thing like the supersymmetry, because the G here is the global symmetry. That's only transform the quarks, the top, to some extra quarks, but they didn't actually touch the color index. So again, this gives us a conclusion. From these two examples, it seems like all the new particles that you have introduced to cancel the divergent is actually all charged under the standard model color. So the question now is it true in general? So is it true that any solution that you can find to solve the little hierarchy problem is you always have to introduce new particle, which is color? First of all, why is it question important? Everything now is because of LHC. LHC is a hadron collider, of course. So everything charged under the SU3 would be very easy to produce by just this diagram, right? You can have gluon, go to another gluon, and then produce two color states. So this color states, all the color states that are predicted by the supersymmetry and little Higgs, they are all charged under SU3, so they can at least be pair produced by this process. And this cross-section is huge in LHC, so that means LHC would tell us when it turn on that if the electroweight scale is just simply because of fine-tuning, or just because there is some new physics that actually make everything become very natural. The LHC would tell us. So this is really a good news, right? Because whatever you have, LHC will tell us when it turn on. But the bad news is, this conclusion is not general. So there's a counterexample, and because it's very different from the previous two examples. The missing point is, in the previous two examples, the symmetry that protect the quadratic divergent, or you cancel the quadratic divergent, is because of some continuous symmetry. For example, supersymmetry and some global group in the little Higgs model, they are all continuous. But actually, the top partner, we define top partner is any particle that cancel the top loop. The top partner actually need only be related to the top, like some discrete symmetry. The continuous symmetry is actually not necessary. And one of the examples is given by the mirror twin Higgs model. And in this kind of model, the actual quarks that you use can do the top loop is actually related to the top by a discrete Z2 symmetry. So if you draw the diagram that make the cancellation, you can see this diagram is exactly the same as a diagram in the little Higgs model. The only difference is the particle run into the loop is charged under the mirror SU3 instead of standard model SU3. So the cancellation work perfectly without actually knowing what kind of color it is for this particle. So this led me to something like this statement. So the color is actually just some kind of dummy index, right? When you do the sum, it means nothing. It actually doesn't affect any cancellation mechanism, you can imagine. Right? So it's just a dummy variable. So that example, the mirror twin Higgs is the first example that show that. So that is very important to know because now we have to really be careful when you try to interpret the LHC result. When you find nothing color, it doesn't mean that the standard model is fine-tuned, right? Because you have to be careful because some other particle may do the work. And of course, then it led us to consider some more general kind of the situation. And this is a 2x2 possibility. Right? So you can cancel the loop, the top loop, by either a fermion or boson, right? In the little Higgs is fermion, in the SUSY is boson. Of course, you can also have some particle, those particles to be colored or non-colored, right? We already know example for little Higgs, SUSY at this corner, and twin Higgs, mirror twin Higgs at this corner. So the question is, what is in this corner? Is that anything actually you can find actually sit in this corner? So the question is, can you find any symmetry that to allow the non-colored boson to cancel the top loop? Okay, so there's some light coming from this correlation function between two models. This is this corresponding in the large energy supersymmetry theory, and is shown by this bunch of people here. So what he said is, of course, in this work, but in picture, is look at this. So let's begin with some model, some theory that they call model theory. So in this theory, you have a lot of supersymmetry. Let's say you have an N supersymmetry, and you also have some gauge group, which is large. So you have an SU, some N or gamma N, then you do a specific projection to throw out some of the state which is odd under this projection, and then you get a different theory, and that theory can be less supersymmetric, and also the gauge group will be broken to a product of SUN or SU sub N. It's just a series of a product. And so this, if you do this, follow the procedure, then you guarantee these two theory are actually equivalent at the limit that when you take n equal to infinity, right? And what it means is that actually you do the calculation of all the correlation function in these two theory, they are the same at all order in the perturbation theory. Of course, one of the special case of this statement is you just choose n equal to 1, so you have n equal to 1 supersymmetry with SU2n gauge group. Then you do this procedure, you get a new theory. You can have a new theory with non-supersymmetric, right? And of course, you break the gauge group to some kind of SUN, cos SUN. And this is very interesting because by this correspondent, it's telling you they should be the same, right? So by using this special relation, I can actually build a model which is non-supersymmetric at all, which is, is somehow dollar theory at one side. But this model actually can cancel the quadratic divergence just because of the model theory, the supersymmetry in the model theory. Because the two theories have to be the same. If this one theory cancels, the other one has to cancel. So you are hidden the supersymmetry in the model theory, but you still get a cancellation in the dollar theory. So, and this is actually the topic of the talk today, which is we call the folded supersymmetry. So, okay, this is the outline of the rest of the talk. So, I'll probably say a little bit more about that large N correspondence. And then we want to use that to actually look at the Yukawa coupling and see how you can use that to actually make a cancellation due to this the top sector. And also we want to cancel the gauge contribution also. So we want to look at how this correspondence can be used to the gauge interaction. And then I will list out a rules. If you want to build a folded SUSY model, there's a set of rules you can follow, and then you can guarantee to have cancellation. And I will show you a realistic model that have a UV completion, which is a 5D supersymmetric model, and some interesting phenomenology, and I will conclude. So this is a lot of words here, but it just restate the correspondence. So what he said is you have a SUN theory, the model theory, then you project the theory, you get the Dollar theory, and in the large N limit, then you have a correlation. The two theories are equivalent. And the proof is actually based on a following. So first of all, you identify that because you have a large N limit, so the contribution is actually dominated by the planar diagram. That is a diagram you can draw on the paper. So, and all the, and of course, it's actually proportional to how many loop, how many dummy index you have. If you have more, then you have more n power. Right? So you have more, then you have dominant. So you keep only those dominant diagram, right? So for that subset of diagram, they can show that the model theory and Dollar theory are equivalent, right? So, and to all the interpretation theory, right? But for us, we actually do need all the powerful statement there. What we need is actually just using that correspondent at one loop, right? Because we are trying to solve the little hierarchy problem. So what we need is a cancellation at one loop. Okay, the good thing about one loop is they are always planar. Right? I cannot imagine one loop can do a non-planar diagram. So they are already planar, so it's already fall into this category. And then, of course, then if you look at the diagram, if you find all the diagrams have an inner loop unbroken, so you can draw inner loops, and that means you have some dummy index there. If you all the diagram have that, then you keep all the diagram you keep is actually under the category they consider. So that means you won't have an one over n correction. That means the cancellation will be complete because they already show that. So otherwise, if you find there's actually some diagram, the inner loop is broken, then you will expect, in general, there might have a 1 over m correction. Right? So the cancellation will not be complete.
Yes, I still don't quite understand what you mean by broken inner loop.
I'll show you just a minute. So it's just some very vague things, and all words. But let's see how this correspondence can be applied to a certain type of coupling. Let's begin with a Yukawa coupling here. So this is not a standard model Yukawa. This is just some general special kind of Yukawa. Yukawa just means you have three fields in it. So this is very special field because now we have, instead of just SU2 or SU3, we have a SU2N1, 2, and 3. We have two gauge groups. For this toy model. So this is the charge of this various field under the gauge group. So they are actually all biduplet. You can see it's a biduplet under different SU2N. So then we can draw the diagram, and also you want to keep track of all the indices, right? So the 1, 2, 3 here is just means, for example, the 2-3 have two set of indices. One set is because of SU2N2, and the other one is SU2N3, right? Because it's a biduplet. It's a 2N by 2N matrix. So you have two indices. So for every field, you just want to keep track, the indices. So you draw two lines for each field to represent the two different indices. So for example, let's look at the Q23 as an external. So you have two indices, you have two and three indices. And by this coupling, the tool can go to the Yukawa coupling, and this is the fermion diagram. So, and the two contract and go to another two, and three contract with three and go to another three, and you left over with another index. Okay, because all the fields have two index, you left over with another line here, and that is what I mean is the inner loop. By in this language, right? So the inner loop is nothing but just try to keep track of the indexes. So you can see what kind of index is actually a dummy, right? So and you can draw a diagram like this. And of course, for the scalar interaction, because this is supersymmetric, you just expand up and find the scalar interaction. It's a four-point interaction. You will find the diagram look like this. Again, the external is 2, 3, 2, 3, with the inner loop is labeled by 1. So 1 now is the dummy index, is the inner loop. And you can see this is the only diagram, only two diagrams you can draw. There's nothing else. And so you can see everything have one inner loop, so they have the same power of n. Okay, so you keep them, there's no extra subleading contribution. So that means, by all those statements, that means the quadratic divergence is good. You can cancel them. It's not good, but you can cancel them in the Dodder theory without any one over n correction. So this is exact. Right. So you can, if you want, you can look at this particular example in more detail. You can do what they did by identify some kind of z, projection operator. And for example, in this particular example, I can find a Z2 gamma, which is this kind of matrix. That's an n-dimensional identity and n-dimensional identity with the minus sign. So under this is how the field transform. And this is the symmetry in the model theory, right? I just wrote down. And you can also identify there's an R symmetry for this model, right? So R parity in this model. So it's you give a fermion an extra minus sign and not for the for the boson. And by the combination of these two Z2, you can find the parity of the boson and the fermion. For the boson, the diagonal component is even. For the fermion, is the off diagonal component is even. So you only keep the diagonal one and the off diagonal of the fermion. So you throw away all the off field, and then you get a new model, and you write down in component, and you find this is a new Yukawa coupling in component field, and this is not supersymmetric at all, right? So then you begin to calculate the diagram of this new theory. And of course, the first term is a fermion against diagonal like this. And this is the scalar from this interaction and this interaction. So now we are switching the label, I'm sorry. We are looking at 1, 2 here. Right? But this is the same because they are actually symmetric. And you can see for this diagram, the 3B is 3B. Okay, I should explain a little bit more. The A and B is because when you break the SU2N, like this, you are breaking down to SUN here and another SUN here, right? So the SUN, 2N, is broken down to SUN A, and I just label it as A and B, it's two different SUN. And this why is an A and B here is. So for the first diagram, you can see, again, there's an inner loop, and what run into the inner loop is actually the 3B index, okay? And for these two diagrams, you have also the inner loop, that's good, but the inner loop has different indexes, it's 3A. Okay, it just means it's a different index under the different gauge group. But important thing is, this calculation doesn't care about is it 3A or 3B, right? It just care about 3A have N indexes. I mean, you can sum, the indexes run from 1 to N. That's all it's care about. So it doesn't care about it's 3A or 3B. So I can actually just change the 3A to 3B. I still get the same answer, right? Because at the end, it's just sum over the index of 3A. Right? And number of index of 3A and 3B are the same. So I can just flip the 2A to 2B, and I'll get the, I didn't change anything. But if I do that, this interaction become actually supersymmetric, right? Because well, you just have to trust me. Okay, so it's okay. So if you do that, the form is look like actually supersymmetric, and that is how you can see the diagram is actually cancelled due to the supersymmetric form. And so then the next thing is how is that correspondent works on the gauge symmetry, on the gauge interaction. So this is very, very different. Now the gauge index, is an adjoint representation. So again, you have two indexes. But these two indices is the same indices, right? Because if you have a SUN group, the A field is AIJ, and AIJ, IJ is the same index under the SUN. So you can actually draw two diagrams. You can draw this, and you can cross the line and get this. Okay, so what it means is you have this diagram, you have some small correction, because you can see this have a dummy variable index. When you do this diagram, you sum over the dummy index, you get a factor of but in this, you lose the dummy sum. So you do lose a factor of n, so you compare, you have a 1 over n suppression. And of course, you can do the same thing for the D term and the Gaugino. You will find this another diagram. Just look at this when you cross these two lines. But I'm not going to say more about this special diagram. But what it means is just now it's not no guarantee that this cancellation will be actually exact, because you have the subleading contribution that is not proved to be within the correspondence. But now, of course, you can just do some explicit calculation like we did for the Tokugawa. So, the procedure is the same, because then you begin with saying you have a SU2N gauge theory. And then for simplicity, I just introduce one fundamental and another one anti-fundamental field, which is a Q and Q ball, and this SU2N gauge field. And then this theory, you have exactly the same symmetry, Z2 symmetry here. So by and you can see under the Z2, this is how this field transform. And again, you just projected out all the even field. You only keep the even field, and this is all the field you keep. And then you can do the calculation in the Dodder theory after you project out fields. And you see, for the gauge boson, you get something like this. And this and this, and some of what you find, this is some leftover piece, it's a 1 over n. Okay, so I don't want to go to that, but actually that is, I found it's very nice, because you can actually get that result by just counting the number of degree of freedom, right? Because the observation is just very simple, because for the gauge boson, the boson is a diagonal. For the fermion, it's off-diagonal. And you can count how many degree of freedom in the diagonal box and off-diagonal box. So very easy. So for the boson, you're coming from the diagonal, it's a SUNA and SUNB, right? You split into the upper corner and lower corner. But if you only calculate the QA, one of the scalar, which is charged under SUNA, you only take into account the upper corner, right? The lower corner doesn't contribute. Then that corner, because as you add, you have this number of degree of freedom, n squared or minus 1. Right? and this kind of like this boson actually contribute some kind of like units. It's 1. Okay. Then, of course, the 2n, the SU2n is broken down to SUN, SUN, and another U1. Right? And this U1 also have a contribution. For the bosonic part, it have 1 degree of freedom, of course, but it's only contribute half, right? Because it's coming from, because the this U1, it have a 1 minus 1. 1 at the upper corner and minus 1 at the lower corner. And lower corner contribute to B, not A. So it's only half of them is contribute to A. Okay, so there's a 1/2 here. And for the fermion, it's coming from off diagonal. And you know how many element there, right? It's N squared. But because it's a complex number, so you have a factor of 2, so you have a total of 2n squared degree of freedom. And again, because of the upper corner and lower corner, so it's only contribute 1/2. And this is how what you get, the minus sign because it's a fermion. Then you can see when you subtract this guy to this guy, you left with 1/2. Okay? Right. So yeah, the next nice thing is if you have begin with U2n instead of U2n, you actually have an extra U1, and for like this U1, you contribute 1/2. If you add that in, then the cancellation will be complete. Is that? But of course, we cannot do that because you know you cannot justify why the gauge coupling had to be the same for the UN. Okay, so this is so far what we know from the exercise we have done. First of all, is we know the gauge coupling cannot be cancelled completely. There's only 1/n, you know, there, correction. But we know the Yukawa, we have a hope there to cancel that exactly. But the example we give is actually much complicated than standard model because every field inside the coupling, in the coupling, has to be bifundamental, and we know. But this is not very useful because we know standard model Higgs is fundamental, it's not bifundamental.
See, how do we know that? I lost track of why we know that.
We know what?
Why is the standard Higgs not bifundamental?
Well, what I just mean is just as the standard model Higgs is fundamental. Standard model, I mean, we don't do any extension. And for that, we cannot apply
okay,
that.
So that's just simply a statement of what the standard model
right.
is. I mean, it's not that you can't replace it by
yeah,
something.
Yeah, no, I didn't put any statement like that. It's, what I try to say is, this is good, right? But we cannot use it in standard model. That's all I try to say. Right? You cannot do it directly to the standard model. You have to do some work. It's not that trivial.
Okay.
That's all I say.
Well, can I
yeah.
So do you have something like a twisted sector?
What mean?
So you get the states that are invariant under this projection.
Right.
But why in the usual orbit ball construction or oriented ball construction, this you also have this twisted sector. Those that are invariant up to us, Zn.
You mean all the R component?
Yeah.
This is very this you can see when I said all before just throw away particle with no reason. I just said okay we are then just throw away right. So later on I'll show you you know like very orbital model you have you begin with 5D then you really define orbital wing and then you consistently you didn't throw it away you just consistently you know finding the effective theory in 4D. And
yeah, but this is just the invariant state. There are
also
this the twisted sectors.
Well,
we can discuss that.
Yeah, to define what is twisted. Oh, okay. So now we are at the point to actually finding a set of rules, and that define actually what we mean by folded supersymmetry. There's a set of rules you can use if you want to build a model. So this rule is actually try to replace the number of particle and a certain type of vertex to a new particle and vertex so that the cancellation will be guaranteed to work up to, of course, 1/n correction. So this rule will be applied to SUN theory and also the topic cover. So this is the three-step rules. First of all, we begin with standard model. Or any non-supersymmetric model, you supersymmetrize the model, right? Because you have to get to the model theory first. So you supersymmetrize that, and then you draw the diagram, and then you identify which all the inner loop or the dummy index. You try to identify which diagram has dummy index, right? And then if you found that, if you and then of course will be the index will run from 1 to some certain number n. Then what you do is you double it, because n to 2n, you double it, and you try to make the loop run from 1 to 2n. And after that, for the case we are going to talk about the Yukawa and SUN, you always can find some type of this kind of Z2 projection that you can use to actually break it down to the daughter theory. And that daughter theory, instead of we get back to 1 over n, but it's a different type of 1 over n, then you will have a cancellation. And this will guarantee that you have a daughter theory that can solve the hierarchy problems, data hierarchy problems, with 1 over n correction. So now, by that set of rules, then we can begin to look at the real standard model and see how we can actually do in a standard model type of Higgs. So first of all, you write out standard model, and this supersymmetry versions. You have a H and U and the doublet tops. And this is a quantum number under SU3 and SU2. First of all, look at the U3. And you can see U3 have 3, so it contract with this, and this the 2 is left over, right? It doesn't care about the 2. So the 2 is actually can be identified as a dummy. And for the HU, because you
close it. Pause for a second. Your U3 is just something that you introduced?
The SU3 color.
Oh, I see.
Oh, yeah. So this is just standard model, the MSSM.
Oh, okay. I see.
So this are SU3 color and SU2 electrodes. So I just want to first the second step is actually identify what is the dummy index. Right? So for the U3, the 2 is a dummy index. For the HU, the 3, the color index is a dummy, and for the Q3, and you can see there's no dummy index, right? So this gives tell us that by just using it without much extension, the Q3 is not protected because there's no dummy in there. You can just build the model. So, but we actually don't care much about the protecting the Q3, the stop. What we want to protect is actually the HU, the Higgs, right? The scalar Higgs. And because then you go to HU, you found the color index is a dummy. So what you have to do is you have to double the sum of the color from 1 to 3 to 1 to 6. So you can do that by extending the color SU3 to SU6 color. Okay, so you double it. And then you find that Z2 of projection to break it down to SU3A and SU3B. So at the end, you will get standard model color SU2, SU3, and another SU3 color, which is you can call it a mirror wall color. So there's another way to do it by double the color index. Instead of extending to SU3, you can just jump one step, faster. You can just go to SU3 cross SU3, but now you have to impose the Z2 symmetry. That's exchange A and B. Okay, you can do that. That also double the index. And if you do that, then you write down the Yukawa, and I'm sure it look like this. And it's invariant under the SU6, and also the SU3 cross SU3 cross Z2 is the same thing in this level. So no, it doesn't matter if you do SU6 or SU3 plus SU3 plus Z2, you get the same theory actually. And because of that, you can we know this is a good Yukawa coupling for protecting the Higgs. So another point is because the HU is a color singlet, so even the gauge interaction doesn't matter to the Higgs. It's either SU6 or SU3. For Higgs, it just doesn't matter. So we can do either way, right? But of course, the simplest thing to do is just do this. You reduce the gauge, number of degree of freedom, a smaller gauge group. So we will do this, SU3 cross SU3, and with the Z2, that exchange A and B. And of course, we can also double the SU2 electroweak symmetry to SU4, right? So if you do that, well, that will help a little bit, because if you do that, that will suppress the gauge contribution, right? By become 1 over n suppression. If you do that, and also you can protect the U3, but it's not very important for us, right? So we just take the simplest form that we will double the SU3 without double the SU2. Okay, this is the most simple form you can imagine in this context. to actually solve their reliability problem. So if you decide what to do, then we begin to try to find a model. We have a UV completion. So this particular UV completion is a 5D model. So it's just a very simple 5D model. You have a flat, a fixed dimension. So you have a two fixed point here. So what we are thinking is you have an S1.
I ask another question. So why do we need a UV completion? I mean, we have something that
Because it's actually this thing is work is because of the supersymmetry in the linear model, right? So if you don't have that, if you just absolutely throw the model away and just look at the dotted theory and say this is the ultimate theory.
Yes. So what happens? What goes wrong
there? That is just very hard to justify the coupling constant here. Because this is a model theory, okay. But mm-hmm. when you project that out, you only keep the certain. What you keep is the quarks, the tops, and the top in the mirror sector, right? And there's no reason why these two coupling have to be the same. Okay, so we can say okay, it's the same by designing. You know, I just write them to be the same. But even you do that, of course you are not really allowed to do that, but even you do that, it's very hard to actually forbid any dynamics to destroy it. For example, you can imagine some higher energy, some unknown UV physics, if you don't have any symmetry, then those UV physics can easily destroy any symmetry you wrote down, because there's no protection. the other way to see it is, if you do that, it's kind of like you have an RG running, you just say at one point they are equal. They just accidentally cross each other, and then at that point they are equal. But there's no guarantee they will be equal.
Well,
that's what
I'm asking, I guess, is if you set them equal at one scale, do they run differently under the RGB?
They actually run differently,
mm-hmm.
right? Because if you don't have any specific symmetry in the UV, everything can just destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
So the UV completion is actually very, very crucial. Because if you write out the dotted theory, forget about the model theory, you just write out the dotted theory, look at it, and there's no reason, there's no symmetry at all to say, okay, this coupling has to be equal to that coupling. Because there's no supersymmetry. Because, okay, we need Z2, we need supersymmetry. If you throw one of them away, there's no reason they are equal. There's no symmetry to protect them. So the UV is very crucial. If you don't have UV, then everything that here is just So the UV here is very simple because we just decide which gauge group to use. This is a gauge group. We choose to double the SU3 like this way, and we keep the SU2, the electro weight, and the U1 have the charge like this, like the standard model.
Mm-hmm.
And we put a full copy of the standard model in the bulk, and and a full copy of standard model in the bulk. And so, and our label that have a standard model at A and the linear model, middle standard model at B. And the Higgs is living in the one of the brain. So I'll choose y equal to 0. Then you have the S1 mod C2 cross C2. So you have two sets of bounding condition. So now the orbit folding, I just project and throw things away, now become just a bounding condition. I have to define a certain type of bounding condition for this field and then look at the spectrum. And in this theory is a 5D n equal to 1 SUSY. So and if you look at it in the 4D language, it becomes n equal to 2. So you have to do certain special type of orbit folding to break it down to non-supersymmetric. So you have to choose that bounding condition in order to break the n equal to 2 to n equal to 0. And this can be done actually by Schwarz mechanism. So you just choose because there's a U1R you can rotate. So you break one brain in n equal to 1, and another branch to another n equal to 1, and all together they break all of them. That's the structural mechanism. And so you also want to keep the standard model fermion and the mirror, the boson in the mirror sectors. Okay? And of course, we keep all the Gauge boson and throw away all the Gauchino. So if you, and this requirement can be done by consistently by defining all the orbiform on all this field. And so at the I won't go into the detail of this, but I just want to point out that at the 4D vector theory, when you have done all this orbifolding, the daughter theory will look like something like this. You have a standard model particle, you have extra gluon, because you have an SU3 cross SU3, right? You have an extra set of gluon. We just call it an F gluon because it's folded. And we don't have a standard model superponent, but we have another set of superponent, which is folded. And all the standard model superponent is much heavier. So at a very low energy, you only see this particle. And so if you only see this particle, the supersymmetry is not manifest. You don't see supersymmetry in that spectrum. So now you can look at so this is just begin to calculate to prove that the cancellation actually happened, right, after you have all this spectrum. So first of all, at one loop, you can calculate the top Yukawa contribution to the Higgs mass, and this actually cancels exactly as we actually demonstrate in the toy model. And in this model, what is nice is it's not canceled only at the zero mode; it's canceled all over the KK mode. So the reason is just because this particular orbifolding we choose, actually at every level of KK level, you have a same number of boson and fermion, and they look like supersymmetric, and they will cancel every one loop correction. But then you have also the gauge contribution to the Higgs, because we didn't do anything on SU2, right? We didn't do anything. So SU2 will be just behave like your usual SU2 corrections in the MSSM. So you'd be proportional to the Gauchino mass square. And this is the Gauchino mass square, 1 over R squared. So this is a one loop corrections because of that. So at one loop, also we know the Q and U is not protected, right? We only protect the Higgs. So you get a one loop correction from your cover coupling and also the gauge coupling. So these are all the one loop corrections. Because of that one loop correction on the top, you fit back in to the two loop diagram, right? And so because of that, you have a two loop correction on the Higgs mass due to the M top. I mean the F top is not zero. So you have a two loop correction. You include all this, then you can actually look at how big is the radial correction overall to the M square, and see how can you actually get the correct electroweak symmetry breaking. And you find the fine tuning will be something like from 12% to 40%, depend on how big you want your Higgs to be. So this Higgs bar of 200 GeV, you can get something like 40%, so it's not fine tuned if you really have a heavy map. Heavy Higgs. Of course, this is an analysis for tangent beta close to 1.
The cutoff is set by 1?
Yeah, the cutoff here is, the 4D cutoff is actually just 1 over R, right? So
you say 1 over R 5dB and cutoff 20.
Oh, this cutoff is a cutoff of 5D theory.
Okay,
so in 4D we have something like this, and this is the constraint because of the top Yukawa coupling. So because we have a fermion, I mean standard model in the bulk and Higgs in the grain,
yeah.
So the Yukawa coupling
so
is small.
Need
you need a big Yukawa coupling.
Another UV completion.
Yeah. So in some sense, you because that you cut huge carbon coupling, you you cannot run into you know, the 5D, you know, the 5D top carbon coupling is kind of big,
yeah.
So you cannot run too high. So you need a UV compression. Yeah.
What does that mean? That in a unified theory, the gauge coupling should unify this 20 ppb or?
We didn't actually pay attention to the gauge unification. I don't know, is it possible to unify 10 TeV or 20 TeV? I don't know. in extra dimension, it's possible to unify much lower than the gauge scale. But I don't remember exactly how.
Well, I guess the statement is that the standard gauge unification is accidental in some sense.
No, in 5D theory, actually, you can unify at much lower scale. It's not 10 to the 16 GeV.
I think there is a point at which they would unify.
Yeah.
Because
well,
it's not guaranteed, right?
No, guaranteed. That involves all the KK mode you have.
Right. So you just don't know whether they
unify. Yeah, we didn't actually go into that, but it's possible, but we didn't actually go into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you need a 10 to the 16 GeV, that kind of
right,
thing.
I understand
yeah,
that,
right.
But
yeah.
There's still a question of whether
yeah, there's a still question.
At all.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we didn't really go to it, yeah.
Usually, the top two give you a negative contribution from the Higgs mass square and gain coupling in your positive contribution,
right?
It turns out the top two internally.
Data is still a negative mass square here.
Yes. But which one is bigger? And how do you get the correct electrical
signal? Right. So if you can. Yeah, you have two contributions, that's right. So you have one from the gauge, which is positive, one loop, but it's small because all the gauge coupling is small. And you have, the two loop contribution, which is negative. And in we check for certain parameter space. It's not guaranteed that you will have this bigger than that one, the gauge coupling for all everywhere. But in a certain parameter space, you can actually have this is bigger than that one. So this can actually cancel that and still give you a negative n squared. Right. And actually, this is how this fine-tuning is in the Kempinski terms. Yeah. So this is possible.
So does that mean you have to just choose particular
you have
parameter to make sure that the electricity
is
any freedom? You can play with some additional term you can add in.
You mean add the negative n squared?
No, that's not possible. So
I don't know if it's not possible, but we don't see an easy way to have it.
Okay.
And of course, this is much nicer.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just saying the electron wave is actually dynamically generated.
Oh, what's a quantic term for Higgs?
Oh, there's a. Okay. That's another this is a big issue because the quantity of the Higgs is of course you can get it from like usual MSSM from the D terms, right? But it's kind of small, but it's one quantity you can get, right? The D terms. That's kind of small, of course. So that's why people have a supersymmetric version of little hierarchy problem, right? Because that quantity is small, really small. We didn't actually do the detailed analysis, but this one comments I can make is something like this. In the MSSM, that is small, but you can get a one loop correction for the quality. You can get another contribution for the quality, right? And the same contribution will give you m squared for the Higgs also, right? Because it's just one loop give you everything. And because of in STEM model, the cutoff is kind of big because we assume it's a effective theory up to a gut scale, right? So the m squared correction have a large log enhancement, and that will cost you a fine tune, another kind of fine tuning in the supersymmetric model. But here is a little bit different because our cutoff is not that high. Remember, it's 20 PV, right? For even lower, if you look at just a 4D theory, it's a by TV. So we don't actually have a large log of code. We don't actually have a high UV completion. But the advantage of that is, the advantage of unknown is actually that we don't have a fine tuning. Not that severe fine tuning like in the MSSM. Okay, that's one point. So we actually the fine tuning is reduced. The second point is you can do some, that is not hard, but there's some messy stuff. You can of course go to MSSM, you introduce another synchronous view, then you'll get a quote from there, the one loop quote. So by combination, you can easily actually get rid of the supersymmetric data hierarchy problem. Okay. So I don't have the transparency of this, but
the point of view that we should have is that this is in an extra dimension, and that defines the end of theory space or the end of energy space. This 20 TeV is that the point of view we should have?
Yeah, this is the end of the 5D theory that I define here.
Right. So that should be the world should have this extra dimension in it and should be set by this 20 TeV scale, and that's.
Of course, I don't know what is going beyond 20 TeV. You can have something. For example, you can have more extra dimension.
My question is, do you need anything?
Well, we do need those things for our discussion, because what we care is, first of all, we cannot probe what's going on at 10 TeV. So whatever happened there is just unprobable for now. So for our discussion, what we care about is, for the little hierarchy problems, it actually doesn't matter. It's too hard to make a difference.
And my other question, is there any analog of the supersymmetric mu problem here, or is that somehow?
Yeah, it's the same mu problem as usual. So, because it's just MSSM. So what you do is...
You've destroyed supersymmetry, so I don't know how to think of the mu term.
But the same argument go true, because you still need some supersymmetric UV completion in 5D.
In 5D,
right.
So my question is do you need a mu term in that supersymmetric completion?
Yeah, we need a solid mu term because we have a UV completion, and below 20 TeV, we have supersymmetric version time theory. So we still have a problem of mu terms. So the mu term can again be solved by introduce the same synchronous field. Right, and MSSM, it's the same thing. Those terms will do two things. One is a new term, and the other thing is give you an extra quote for the case. Mm-hmm. Yeah, So we addressed the fine-tuning problems, and actually this is another quite severe problem in the model, which is somehow it's like the LSP. Now the LSP at the mirror world is the right-handed selectron, okay? And it's charged. So somehow it's charged under standard model. So somehow you have some very stable particle going around in the universe, which is charged. And it's dark matter, but it's charged. So that is the cosmological problem here. And we have to do something else to actually solve that. So this is a massive part of the model. You have to introduce this special non-really normalizable operator. It's like a proton decay kind of operator. So you have to introduce this and this. And what this do is the LB is a mirror lepton. Before we introduce this particle, because of the R parity, all this thing is very stable, it's not decay. But this thing will let it decay to 3 standard model quark or squark. And then have a lepton variation here. Okay. So you also introduce the reverse quark. I mean, not really reverse quark. You have to introduce another operator which actually symmetric under the Z2, A to B, right? And this is good because now the baryon, the baryon in the mirror model can actually decay. Mm-hmm. It's like a proton decay, but it's a proton decay in the mirror model. So all the mirror model particle is not stable, they all decay. And it's safe for us because now our proton is actually here, right? You just switch it. And our proton can only decay to by introducing this operator, our proton can decay to mirror lepton. But mirror lepton is heavy. So we are the proton is okay, it's not decaying. So one way, not the other. Okay? So the mirror particle will just all decay, but our proton is still safe by protected by baryon number conservation.
So you say the LSP is a Higgsino, that's a Higgsino in the on our
yeah, the Higgs because the Higgs is nothing more than a standard model MSSM Higgs. It's the same as an MSSM.
Right.
So now the difference is now our standard model, all the superparticle, the squawks, lepton, everything is much heavier, it's all gone. So the only thing that is left over is a Higgsino in our standard model samples.
So that part of supersymmetry is still there.
Yeah, that part of supersymmetry actually is still there.
Okay, I didn't appreciate that because you only did the supersymmetry for the larger gauge group, for the color group.
So, in fact,
in order to get an LSP, I guess you don't want to extend your
the Higgs to
folded business to include the Higgs.
That's actually a good point. that's good. I mean, so we try to do the simple thing, but actually, simple thing is actually good for LSP. Right. So we didn't actually extend the Higgs sectors, and somehow the Higgs sector will give us a LSP. Mm. Yeah. There's just all the proton is still stable, and the mirror proton will be decaying to something else. So now we can kind of like look at this collider. What can we expect to see in the collider? So first of all, the new particle, of course, except the Higgsino, which is a dark, is very easy to see, is missing energy. Except that, the new particle will be the lepton in the mirror sector, and the squawk in the mirror sector. Right? So first of all, let's look at the F lepton. So this because this particle is not charged under color, but it's still charged under SU2. Okay, so it can be easily be produced by the WNZ.
So once again, if you extended it to include the SU2 in this game, then you would lose this coupling, right?
Extend the SU2 to SU4 or something?
Well, yeah, if you did include the SU2 gauge group into your folding, you would lose this kind of phenomenology, would you? The WNZ?
Would
they couple or not?
No, they are. Some of them is still this thing is still coupled, but what you do if you do that, you in addition to this field, you have another sector, another double. It's like a left right model.
I see.
Right? Mm-hmm. So you have a left piece is still here. This thing is here, but you have another copy which is the left handed piece. It's like a left right model.
Mm-hmm.
So you can produce this the right handed piece by the right handed gauge boson.
Yeah.
Right. And that is accessible actually for LSP actually, even for that kind of one or two TeV or four TeV gauge boson, right? You can still produce them. So I think that will just give you extra signature.
I see.
Yeah. So you are not losing anything. So first of all, okay, you can at least pair produce a slepton by first generating the W or Z and even photon and then let it decay. So you can produce some heavy lepton and they will just keep decaying to the what is the LSP in the mirror sector, right? And which is the F lepton, which is about, I think it's about 100 GeV or 150 GeV. This is not correct, so it's another one here. So it's a range of 100 something GeV, those particles. And this is kind of like a stable, semi-stable thing. So this thing only decay because of the non-renormalizable operator we wrote down. And that is absolute free parameter. So we don't know how fast this guy will decay. That depends on that parameter. And of course, but we do know what kind of particle it decay to. It can decay to three jets, three quarks. So you get something like every one of them you become a three jet and some missing energy, which is the LSP signal. So you have two of them, then you get six jet signal. And for the squawks, F squawks, again it can be just easily produced by W or Z, by the electron. So when you produce them, the difference here is because of the spectrum in the neural sectors, because we don't have actually the light quarks. All the quarks is very heavy. All the quarks is like 500-700 GeV. We don't have up down quark like in the standard model. So and all this, we don't have light quarks. And I mean, what it means is you compare with the lambda QCB, right? I mean, when you produce two apps quark, the scalar quarks in the neural sectors, they cannot hadronize because they are all too heavy, right? So these two guys just sit there, right? But because the strong coupling, it had to be somehow bound together in a bound state. So the only thing can do is they can only form a bound state by these two scalar. So you form a scalar like this, and then because you produce them at a very high angular momentum things, right? They two just go away from each other. Then somehow they do bound. And so this at the beginning is very high, excited state, so then you give producing decay, just emit a lot of photon and gluon and things like that. So it's very soft. Then you go down to bound state. Then at the end, they have to be annihilated. So this thing will be annihilated and produce something else. That something else can be either some standard. You get back to standard model because this guy have SU2 charge. They can jump, boom, and become a W and Z. And then everything else later is just a standard model. So we can produce two standard model particles and something else. And of course, because they also have a color, mirror SU3 color. So you can either produce a standard model particle or some blue ball in the mirror sector. Okay? So this is how this thing can decay. So the signature will be just two types. Okay, first of all, if the thing is become to blue ball, then you have to look at the blue ball, right? If you decay to blue ball, but the blue ball is for us is a dark energy, not a dark energy. So it's a missing energy, right? Because our detector doesn't have a charge under that SU3, so it's somehow missing energy. So we have to look at the decay of the blue ball, but somehow we estimated that operator. You write out another effective operator, not write down, but you just estimate how big it is by so you expect something like F mu nu, and then Higgs square. You can somehow expect by dynamics you can have some effective operator like this, right? And these are all, then you can estimate by counting, by just dimension analysis, you can count estimates by order of magnitude how big this operator is. And we estimate that, and unfortunately, the blue ball is decayed too slow. And so what is happening is actually it's decay outside detectors. So what we see is just missing energy, nothing else, in that channel. So it's we are losing some blue ball signature here. But of course, it's not only the blue ball. You can also decay of different, we go to the Z and W and then decay into a standard model particle. And that is very easy to see.
If you come back, so how does the F blue ball turn into a
just a W or Z, how do you get rid of your second group color?
Well, the color is single because it's a F and your QQ bar. It's a bouncing, it's a meson.
What is it composed of again? The two F quarks.
Yeah, this is two F quarks. Actually, when you bow a state, it's like a meson.
But they're heading out at high energy. That's the
picture. They're very high energy, and at the beginning, then.
But how do they annihilate? So this problem of the inside outside cascade.
So you have to go through a cascade, and that cascade is not decaying, just losing energy. So let imagine you have two particles, is strongly bound. So it's like imagine is if you go, I mean, it's a QCD. So if you go further, the strong is more stronger. So you just go to up to a certain distance scale, right? And you basically stop there and form a meson type of particle. Of course, this kind of particle, because they are quite separated, so they can have a high angular momentum.
I guess I mean usually in the inside-outside cascade picture, if the color is being carried by the rapidly moving guys and there's nothing to slow them down, which is what you're saying, then it's not possible for them to annihilate.
In the usual picture, you cannot slow them down because you keep heterogeneous when you go. Because you can keep pulling particle to you instead of just losing power energy. If you keep pulling particle and heterogeneous, right? But the process here is quite different. This is not an option here now, because you just don't have anything to pull to heterogeneous. But the strong dynamics tell you the only thing you can form is meson. So it's not like we actually calculated.
I just don't see how that could possibly win over just getting your two.
These springs can't break.
There's no light quote in the mirror.
Well, I understand that, but doesn't that guarantee that they get these two F blue balls just going out through the detector? Is that, how can you do anything else other than that? That's what I don't see.
This is just for the confinement.
for the quark, they carry out the standard model quantum numbers.
So first of all, the two guys try to go away from each other have a string.
F string.
So that's have a huge tension at the beginning, right? Because it's like pump. The two particles try to break it,
mm-hmm.
right? So when you try harder, the force become stronger. That's a QCD. Right? So the tension is very high at the beginning. So that tension will be slowed down by losing. I mean, it's softened by emitting all the possible gluon or photon, just giving out energy. Right, so this string will be softened by going down to the lower excited states, right,
mm-hmm.
emitting energy. Okay, so at certain point, this process is here. So at the beginning, you have a meson that's connected by a very high tension string, and there's a very high energy inside. Right, so you can look at it, it's everything is excited states. The two scalar is very excited, they have angular momentum very high. And the tension itself is also very strong. I mean, very excited, in a very excited state. And then you're just going down to lower energy state by emitting gluon. The soft gluon, the F gluon, it's not a gluon, the F gluon, right? The F, as you can see. Then just emitting gluon and keep going down to a lower energy state from the energy state. And then at some point, after you lose all the energy, while the string goes to the ground state, then of course, the angular momentum will also go to the ground state,
mm-hmm.
and when they are close enough, they can annihilate. And this is the second state.
So, but let's say by an F blue ball, maybe, how do you define an F blue ball here? just the F anti F
anti
combination.
Yeah, it's acting only at new things.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I guess it's not clear to me why, if you could do that at the very beginning, that would be a lot easier, a lot more probable than all this multiple emission that
you
needed to slow these guys down.
You mean another dam with a very high angular momentum?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, why would it go to all the trouble
doing
all this emission rather than just forming those two initial F blue balls?
Well, I guess this is dynamically possible, but it's just the probability will be just small because they are so spacely, you know, separated and very high angular momentums. You have to really go down to very brown states. Then the wave
but
function.
But as you said, the string has this huge high tension. Why wouldn't it just break by forming two singlets and be done with it? That's what my question
is. Well, you think break the SU3 string?
Yeah,
like
break the second SU3B string very early on and form your two blue balls, and then they just
No, wait. This is not a blue ball.
What?
It's that they two annihilate and become a blue ball. This is squark. It's like a
squark. But you make another squark pair very early on to break the string.
That you need a hadronization for each of them, right? And that is not available. Or the squark, the virtual squark is too heavy.
But you have this huge tension, so you just
You have to compare how much
you separate a certain amount. I don't know what that amount is, and then the string breaks because you've got enough energy in the string to make your two extra guys, and then everything takes off.
Uh-huh.
If the quarks are heavy enough, then they'll turn around and start going back towards each other before.
That could be true too. So I mean, it seems like a very complicated. I'm asking, how do I know which of these dynamics?
I think the only. Of course, I didn't calculate the QCD. I guess the argument that I can give is you have to compare the how likely. I mean, both of them are equally possible. I mean, not equally possible or possible, but then the question is how likely are they, right? So then, I guess you have to produce, you have to look at the time scale of this kind of process is going.
Yeah, I mean, it probably also depends on the energy with which they're made. There may be some that are made softly, and then they will just sort of thermalize or something. And some that are made very energetic.
Yeah, I think the hadronized scale is set by the Laplace QCD.
Well, or the analog in the other group.
Right,
but
analog,
same,
right.
Yeah.
The lambda FQCD,
right.
The hadronization is controlled by that.
Yeah.
So, and that is 10 GeV for our
10 GeV.
10 GeV, right.
Right, that's what I thought. So
yeah.
I'm thinking that, many most LHC jet.
Right, but all other process, it doesn't have to have lambda QCD involved. Right? You can just go down to lower energy states.
So it's just a question of what's most probable in terms of how energetic are the jets. If they're more energetic than 10 GeV, then I guess you would get the string breaking. And if it's less energetic,
that's a question. So here we have a tension of string which is at the scale of the collider, almost because let's say of the scale of a dynamics. I mean the energy of this particle, right?
Yeah.
The energy here. So what I described earlier is all the tension and all the angular momentum, the energy they involve is much, much higher than hadronization, right? Because hadronization just involves the lambda FQCB, which is 10 GeV. But any energy scale happen here is like a few hundred GeV.
Right, so that's what I'm saying.
So for
100 GeV,
make
100 GeV guys, then the first thing they're going to do is just break the string and make the two blue balls.
No, I don't think this is a picture.
If you make lower energetic guys...
You can't break the string with two blue balls. You need quark, anti-quark.
Well, that's what I'm saying, to form two blue balls. So you break, if you have 100 GeV jet, and the hadronization scale is at 10 GeV, and the first thing that's going to happen is the string is going to break, and you're going to make these two blue balls, and then they're going to continue on out is 100 minus 10 GDP.
There's an argument saying that they cannot have you want to create another pair of coordinates for the color single, right?
Right, yeah,
but
F, F color single.
But those are 5 TB.
I remember.
Oh, but I thought you just told me they were 10.
No, but this is a lambda QCD, 10 GeV.
It's 10 GeV, but the mass of the.
The mass of those particles
are 10, 5 TB.
No, it's not that high, but it's like, you know, 700, 500 GeV. So it's much, much higher than lambda QCD. And
let's see, the F. Is F color drives, what are their masses?
The Audax scalar?
Yeah, the F, whatever it is that
right.
You're making here.
The green thing here is like it can be like 500, 700 GeV. I mean the mass.
Right,
yes. Okay. So, of course, the when it's produced by, I don't know, produced by this guy? Yeah,
okay,
I think
well
it's still like
okay, so
that.
Then the pair creation that has to occur is also at something like 700 GeV, right?
Right.
Okay, so then, okay, well then I understand. All right, continue.
So, okay, so this is one of the, so this is a good signal if actually it's decay to standard model. Hopefully, we can actually trace back to identify, to measure the mass. I don't know. We didn't do any analysis on that. Okay. So okay. So just put a conclusion here. So what we have done is we show that by using folded SUSY, we can solve the lab paradox without using the usual stop at MSSM, and the signature, you know, in the LHC can be very very different from what you would expect from a supersymmetric model, and this kind of like provide another counter example of what people believe, which is I brought out at the very beginning that all the solution to the lab paradox have to involve colored particle, and that's not true, and this model actually provide another cover example. This is my talk. Thank you.
So is there any effect on Higgs phenomenology in all of this?
Higgs phenomenology.
I mean, assuming it's 100, 200 GeV or something
right.
Like that, it doesn't decay into any of these new particles, I guess. They're all...
Yeah, they also have
the LSP, what was your estimated mass for the pre-LSP, the NLSP, that was in, again in this 500, 700
You know, the next LSP, not the Higgsino, I was saying.
Right,
the
yeah,
next
the next guy, yeah.
Yeah, the next one would be... very, very heavy. It would
yeah.
Be like something like the 1/R scale. So it's like a few TV.
Is it possible for the Higgsino LSP to be very light in this model? I think you said not. But,
to be very light?
Very light.
So this is, you mean like from the cosmology things?
Well, no, just from your model building.
Well, we don't have actually a prediction of the Higgsino mass. Because there's a mu term,
it's
right?
It's just a mu term
yeah,
problem.
And
back
right.
To that. Yeah, okay.
Right, back to that. So we do have prediction for,
yeah.
for that. So it's just a free parameter there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But do you expect mu term to be small? Usually you need a big mu term because you have two negative contribution from the top group. Now you have cancel the biggest part, so
right,
you have
right.
A small
yeah.
Negative contribution, so you probably need a small mu term.
Probably smaller mu terms. Yeah. But that also depends on tangent beta. Okay? How big your mu term have to be, that also depends on tangent beta. So, I know how big how you have to be. So for this, if you just naively take tangent beta equal to one, or close to one, or things like that, so then that means for 10% fine tuning, you have to have a few hundred GeV for that, for you, like 200 or 300 GeV for you. That's about right to cancel this guy to let's say 10%, because it's factor of 3 in the mass, then the mass weight is factor of 9, and then maybe like 10%. So then you have to be like, you know, 300 GeV, 300 GeV, yeah. So, yeah. But of course, the whole real analysis is more complicated than this, because you can choose, you can choose different tangent beta.
So it's in, let's see. Let me just review one other thing. It's not possible to have a gate Geno LSP.
The gate Geno is heavy.
Just the pure SU2.
It's still heavy.
Still heavy, right. And that's why again, because that's living in that part of the gauge group that's in the bulk.
Right, it's the gauge group is in the bulk, mm-hmm. And we break everything, but we still want to keep SU2 gauge boson. So the only thing we keep is SU2 gauge boson.
Yeah.
Everything just one of the all,
yeah.
All with high R.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, so the gauge Geno will be like something like a few TeV.
Yeah, okay. Does anybody remember what the status of having a Higgs Geno LSP is? I thought that was ruled out by something nowadays. Yeah, it's dark matter. Unless you had some special co-annihilation. What is the story? I can't quite remember.
We need the direct detection.
Yeah, there's a direct detection issue, but I guess that can be escaped if you're, for a locally non-dense area or something like that. But I mean, in general, there is certainly a direct detection issue for the Higgs Geno LSP.
It probably annihilates too fast.
And I think it annihilates. That's my other memory, is that it annihilates too fast. Hard to get to, but I don't know whether that's true independent of mass. He has quite heavy Higgs Genos in principle here. Then it can be single Geno and you're safe, right?
Yeah, so if you want to get even deeper, and there's other candidate in the. So if you do more model building stuff, for example, if you introduce the NMSSM, you still have to guarantee that the S get a bath, which is the scale you want. So that is again is is another thing you have to generate negative things, right? To get a bath and give you new terms, and then you have to do some massage on the model building. You have to introduce some of the field to give the chord to the S. And you do that, and you have new particle, and those particle can actually be dark matter also.
Yeah.
Can be
the NMSSM supersymmetric construction, you can generate the appropriate BEV for the S just by the soft supersymmetry breaking parameters. I don't know whether there would be any analog in this model,
but
or not. I'd have to
but
think about that.
But then you have a free parameter, and without knowing what is that soft parameter, right? It's just like MSSM. You just treat everything like parameters.
Yeah, I mean, just generically, it's true that if your soft supersymmetry breaking parameter is
right.
TeV at the scale of the TeV, then you get an appropriate depth,
mm-hmm.
the S. But I don't know what would play the analog in your model to that statement.
Mm. Yeah, because we begin everything with supersymmetry, so we don't actually have anything which is a soft mass parameter in the model.
Yeah, I mean it's all just this
Schwarz mechanism, and then feedback into the light particle by loop correction.
Yeah.
Yeah, so,
so somehow the Schwartz would have to do this, maybe, I don't know.
Schwartz is very, very rigid. It's not like you can actually choose the spectrum. Right?
Yeah.
It's just you give the boundary condition, then the spectrum is just discrete and,
right,
and determined
right
by 1 over R, and that's it. And everything is just dynamics.
So 1 over R would be, what scale is that again? That's
we take it to be 5 TeV. 5 TeV,
yeah. So
right,
that would be kind of big for an appropriate, if that was the thing that set the rev of the S, then that would be kind of big.
Yeah.
That would be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, anyway. Just using here.
Let's let go again.
Yeah.